This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Inflation, not only in the United States, but also overseas. The United Kingdom, where I report a deal. Right now, the cost of living there includes this stark fact. Not only month to month are they at an annual rate now of more than 10%, double-digit inflation, but at the grocery store, the report is 11.6% inflation at the grocery store in 4 weeks. That is inflation. It isn't driven by any of the U.S. activities. It's driven by a worldwide crisis underway, having to do with energy, with shortages, with doubts, and the poor planning of the United Kingdom and Europe for the possible cutoff, and now actual cutoff, by Russian energy. I welcome Véronique de Rougie of the Mercatus Center to comment on inflation driven by energy costs in Europe, and where she's just visited Europe. But here in the United States, we have plenty of energy. So what are we worried about? The price of gasoline is going under $4 a gallon at the pump. We've got plenty of natural gas. It keeps flowing. Our electricity rates, while higher, are not crushing us. So why should we concern ourselves with worldwide inflation? Véronique, a very good evening to you. What happens in Europe comes our way. I understand it. But what is driving the European inflation? Is it the same as what drives it here? And does it really matter what the driver is? The solution has to be tightening. Good evening to you.
Good evening. So for Europe, excluding the UK, which is not part of Europe anymore, really, the problem is mostly supply. I mean, their country, they suffer from some level of inflation that's the same as us, driven by central bank action and spending. But for them, it's really been growing rapidly since the beginning of the war in Ukraine. Tightening will do nothing to that. Only increasing the supply of whatever is driving inflation here, likely the price of food and grains and energy due to the war. The UK has two problems. It has, like the US, it has spent an enormous amount of money on stimulus spending for COVID. I think close to, like us, like 29% of GDP in COVID rescue. And it suffers from an energy crisis that we don't suffer from as much. So again, the Federal Reserve can do a lot to temper inflation. I mean, it's not easy. It has tools to tame inflation, especially if it gets help from the spending authorities or the spending and taxing authorities when the inflation is driven by demand. For the supply side inflation, the tightening doesn't really make a difference.
So Europe's driver is their poor planning for energy. They also have inflation from the pandemic. Our problem here is the spending during the pandemic, the so-called transitional inflation, the temporary inflation. Well, it's here with us, and we print not quite double digit. We're not headed there, but we're high. We're high single digit.
Now we're high, but it's been in decline. The top number has been in decline, reflecting a decline in our supply problems, especially for energy. You see the price of gas going down, gasoline at the pump going down, and all of this is reflected in the top number for inflation. Core inflation, on the other hand, has been flat. So it's still not growing, but it's flat. But I think the fact that it's not declining yet is what gets the Federal Reserve concerned and certainly committed to continuing its effort through more rate increase.
And that is important. The Federal Reserve continue its course to raise interest rates. We have indication from the notes published in these last days from the last Federal Reserve meeting in July that they mean to stay the course. Whether it's a half point or three quarters of a point, I would welcome the harsh medicine right away. Let's get after what's wrong with us. However, there is a subordinate issue that can become a dominating issue, and that is spending. You've often said, you know, Congress could help if it didn't spend money. Well, since you've been away, they didn't wait, Veronique. They spent money. And you have a piece up at Creators Syndicate right now of the CHIPS Act and also the Inflation Reduction Act. They're spending money. Now, is that helpful to the Federal Reserve, hurtful to the Federal Reserve?
No, it's not helpful to the Federal Reserve. I mean, if you believe that, as I do, that in this particular case, part of the inflation that we have has been fiscally driven by the excess spending, and also by the belief, basically mostly what triggered the inflation is that people believe that all of this spending that's injected into the economy, but also the rise of the debt, is not going to be paid back. That has impacted inflation. This has triggered inflation. This is not helping at all. I mean, it would be really useful that alongside the rate increases, Congress implemented fiscal consolidation in order to help the Federal Reserve constrain demand. But there's none of that that's happening. I mean, we can say, I mean, it's possible that the increase in taxes in the investment in the Inflation Reduction Act will do that, but apparently it's just not happening and going. It's not going to be helping right now. So, I mean, it's and they want to spend more. They want to spend more money.
I rush to make excuses. The CHIPS Act is industrial policy. We're defending ourselves from the aggression of the People's Republic of China that is threatening Taiwan, which would knock out, as I understand it, a large proportion of the high-end chip making at TSMC. So we have to build, goes the argument, here in the United States. The Inflation Reduction Act is said to worry about the future, to concern itself with reducing greenhouse gases by subsidizing electric vehicles. Now, that's industrial policy as well. Isn't that worthwhile, or is it always?
It's industrial policy, and the thing that's more infuriating about the type of industrial policy that we're doing is that, especially in the CHIPS Act and with the $52 billion of subsidies for the semiconductor industry, it's not as if the semiconductor industry has actually not been doing well. And they're already committed to investing way more money in building way more chips and investing way more in the U.S., and that they did before the subsidies. I mean, companies don't need subsidies to invest. I mean, when you look at investment in R&D, specifically for technology, it's actually going up. If in the private sector, R&D is going up. The last, 20 years, R&D investment by the private sector has been going up. And even though the federal subsidies have actually been flat. So this notion that people seem to believe in the U.S., first, that in order to not have a communist regime and a very statist, dirigist regime like China become dominant, we have to copy them. That seems totally counterproductive. There's lots of evidence that China is actually in trouble economically. So their policies are not working that great. But the other thing, this notion that in order to produce, invest, and innovate in America, what we need is more government subsidies. That's like literally a radical shift in the way we used to think in this country. And the fact that some Republicans are actually going along with this narrative is baffling to me.
The fact that Congress is spending this money, does that guarantee that the Federal Reserve has longer to fight than not, so that the interest rates need to be raised for the rest of the year?
I think as long, it's going to be harder on the Federal Reserve if this flow of money continues going into the economy, if they want to continue forgiving debt like they're talking about, this is just not good. And remember, one of the things that's important to determine whether spending is may turn into inflation is whether people believe that this debt, this extra debt, is going to be repaid. And if they're just spending, and there's never any talk of fiscal consolidation, austerity, whatever you want to call it, then it's more likely that people are going to believe and is going to affect expectation. And we really, it's good that core inflation is stable and not growing, but if they continue like this, who knows?
Veronique de Rozier of the Mercatus Center. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,